Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f- So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Prepare at last his return. Your behavior our savior deserves.
You are listening to Tribulation Farce. I am Tim. This is my wife, Jennifer Cheek.
Hello.
Jennifer, how are you today?
I honestly shocked by your peppiness just then. I feel like you were, like, so low-key, and then the second we started recording, you became animated.
About 9 months ago, I stopped sleeping.
And my
register of voice was much deeper. So I have to push myself harder on podcasts so I don't just be like, yeah, you it was know, fucked whatever. Up and funny, man.
Now, listeners, I will tell you, are we sitting in the dark right now drinking wine as we're about to record this? The answer is yes.
Well, we always do that, even if that's not the specific thing for which we're doing.
Right. Like, we're always doing that.
That's what we're always doing.
Like, spiritually.
Spiritually.
Sitting in the dark drinking wine.
Jennifer, you're saying that we are over halfway done.
We are at the end of chapter 13. That is over halfway done.
Why
the book?
Why do you think they included the chapter 13 and didn't just go from 12 to freaking 14?
Well, I could see them being like, that's witchcraft to think that the number 13 actually has any power. And so actually, that's bad.
We got a great one for you today, folks. God. Today we got a great one for you
this
today, folks.
This one was making me want to jump off of our deck. Tim and I, we don't usually read at the same time beside each other, and Tim had to tell me to shut the fuck up.
I did tell her to shut the fuck up.
I was getting, this is the thing, when I'm by myself, I do often react that way. So I'm used to just doing my thing and being like, oh my God, while I'm reading.
I just read a part where Rayford was like, I had to stop myself from smacking Chloe.
That was a bark!
And you were just yapping at me, and I was like, oh no, I'm getting mixed signals here. Rayford, who's a new Christian, by the way, wants to smack his daughter.
He does! Yeah, that was a wild part of these two chapters. These two chapters are pretty wild, honestly.
Yeah. We're in it, gang. I know that I've said that six times, but we continue to get in it, deeper into the, I guess, tribulation mind.
Into the what's the word I'm looking for?
The bowls.
No, the lore.
The lore.
The lore of the Left Behind universe.
Yeah. I think it is a misnomer to say that we're getting deeper into the bowls because...
We haven't even gotten the
bowls. Well, wait. The bowl judgments. I thought one of the bowl... Wait, I'm getting confused.
Yeah, we're going to have to do, like, a side, like, Bible study to get ourselves, like, ready for when shit actually starts happening.
Because... I kind of thought maybe there's bells and bowls.
Oh, there's trumpets. There's
trumpets.
Bowls, like, there's all sorts.
Because I think the rapture is one of the things, but it's not one of the bowls. Because the bowls is like the comet hitting and the scorpion.
Well, so this is the thing. I think that we're technically not in the tribulation period right now.
Yes, we are.
Is it?
Yeah.
Because I thought it was like something else happened after the rapture, and then is when it really started.
I see what you're saying.
Like, I think it's in the in-between zone, so I don't think that shit is really fully going on yet. But I could be wrong. I may be misremembering.
Whether you are correct or not is ultimately impossible to say.
Right now.
But we will see what the... Yeah. What the book says, because now that you're saying that, I can kind of feel like, well, I know that there's the first half, the first three or so years.
It's three and a half.
Three and a half.
It's exactly three and a half. And then there's a thing, there's an event that happens in the middle, and then the second three and a half years.
The rest gets crazy. And, you know, we're covering chapter 12 and 13, and in these chapters, we kind of outline how this series is going to go, more or less.
Yeah.
We get our first major scripture.
Yes, yeah, that's very deep in chapter 12.
And I just want to talk about it, but is there anything else buzzing a boot
Well, just that there was one thing that I've been waiting to talk about the entire time we've been doing this podcast. Mm-hmm. We've been doing this podcast, and it's happening in this chunk of chapters. Dear, and I am so excited to talk about it.
Dear Tribbies, that's what we call you.
Dear Tribbies.
We don't do that.
Tribbers.
August 13th. Getting a vasectomy next week.
Yeah. Does that make you feel like you're not following the Lord? Do you feel any little bits of, like, satanic vibes?
No.
Going into you?
Because I feel like we're in the tribulation now. And I
mean, we basically
And
are.
We have been for the past 3,000 years.
Yeah.
So.
Before the Bible was even written. We've been in the tribulation period.
Yeah. So I think it would be rude to bring a child into a world like this. So that's just my goddamn opinion.
Yeah. I just don't want to deal with all
Chapter
that.
12!
Tim always he has to interrupt me. It's the only way to be. Sorry,
you let me listen to the dollop and now.
It's real. It is very funny. It's a good bit. And honestly, I like it.
Yeah.
Guys, Buck's not actually dead, just like God. Oh, once again, I have some notes on the structures of the chapters, Tim LaHaye and Jerry Jenkins. Like, why do you have these, like, tiny little chunks where, like, nothing happens and then you skip to somebody else? Like, I don't get it.
Yeah, this is...
Put them together.
This
makes
is
no
the,
sense.
Equivalent of a pre-credit scene in a show with no dialogue.
But it's a chapter.
But
in
it's
a
chapter in a book.
It's a middle chapter in a book.
I think it's one of those things that's like, well, we gotta include him being like, damn, I'm Buck Finn.
I'm alive. Can you please actually just
Jennifer, did you hear my joke and understand it?
Say it again?
I'm Buck Finn.
Because he died, because he pretended he was dead mm-hmm. and wanted everyone to show up at his funeral mm-hmm. and be sad.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And now, is that Tom Sawyer or Huck Finn? I don't remember.
I think that's Tom Sawyer that did that, but.
But Tom Sawyer was a rascal because of Huck Finn.
That because Huck Finn was like the one that was like, I'm living by myself on my little river, like,
isn't
raft
it fucked
or whatever.
Up to like watch the Tom Sawyer stuff and then you see like adult, older Huck Finn and you're like, whoa.
I gotta be real with you. I know very little about Tom Sawyer or Huck Finn.
Tom Sawyer is the one with the fences.
He tripped people into painting the fence for him. That's little that and he faked his own funeral. Those are like the only things I know about.
And Huck Finn is the one with the racism.
Oh. Well. Tim, can you please just read this little quote from Buck calling his dad to let him know he's okay?
I'm really sorry about this, Dad, but you're going to hear I was killed in some sort of car bombing, terrorist attack, that kind of thing.
Just like real cash. Like, yeah. Hey, listen. You're going to hear that I'm dead via explosion, but don't worry about it. I'm actually alive.
And I think that since Huck Finn and Tom Sawyer are different like,
okay. mm-hmm.
enough, but mm-hmm. I think that they're in the same wheelhouse.
Well, they, like, interact with each other.
Yeah. Are they real people? I have now forgotten. I don't believe so.
I do not think so. I believe they were made up by Mark Twain. Mm. A famous atheist, by the way.
Whoa.
He hated the Lord, I'm pretty sure.
I do think it's sick that Buck gets to do all this cool stuff.
Oh, Buck's life is, I mean, his life is very cool. Like, we can agree with that.
Yeah, and I do like that his dad is like, should we have a funeral for you?
Yeah, that was pretty sick of him to be like, so, like, do you need help with this ruse you're trying to pull on the world?
Which I kind of have to give it up for a dad that is game to do, like, information crimes. Yeah. You know, this I believe this is some sort of...
Maybe insurance scams?
Yeah, they should definitely insurance scam.
Oh, damn. Okay. We have a lot to cover, and this is not on topic, but, like, imagine the various insurance scams that are happening post-rapture.
Well, most likely...
They're not even, like, scams. It's probably more like the insurance company's like, whoopsie, we can't pay you.
No, the only insurance scam that's happening is the goddamn insurance industry.
All
Do you hear me, folks?
Earthquake insurance? It's fucked up.
Yeah, Jennifer and I just turned down earthquake insurance, which most assuredly means St. Louis is going to hit by the big
one. Yeah, guys, can you please pray that we don't get the big one? Our house will go down into a hole.
For shit, like, whenever things like that happen, the insurance companies just run out of money.
Yeah, they're just like, whoopsie, no whoopsies. Money. So probably a bad time. I do feel like, and we actually get into this in these chapters more, that they hadn't really been focused as much on how fucked up the world is post-rapture.
We've taken a break.
But they get into it more in this one.
Yeah, and they both talk about in the present how it's fucked up. sort of like 2.0, where meaning you're not getting hit by empty cars or anything like that. Now there's people that are like looting and things. So yeah, we get exactly. a little more of that later.
So yeah, Buck lets his dad know he's alive, and he lets Steve Plank, his number one boss and BFF, know that he's alive.
And he does it in such a sick way. He's like, Hey, this is not Buck, by the way.
I wish that he had like a voice modulator thing on.
He's like, just puts his freaking shirt over his mouth.
Yeah, yeah, but he doesn't. Anyway, now we have to cut to Rafer, and he's fucking sad that Chloe's not immediately becoming a Christian, even though yeah. he's not actually a Christian at this point either.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It is really funny, this the whole vibe of like, what did I do to raise such a skeptic?
It's like, willful child!
Did you read any of the previous chapters? Like, again, I'm curious if they're writing Rayford so inconsistently and as such a shithead to be like, hey, flawed characters, we're trying to get a Golden Globe.
I don't think they're that good. Yeah. I think this is a mistake.
I think they're just picking and choosing. And, you know, when Rayford talks shit about Chloe,
yeah.
we, the audience, are like, yes, that dumb bitch.
When actually, again, every time Chloe speaks, I'm like, she's right.
Yeah.
She's right. She should say it.
Other than her saying daddy, everything yeah, she says is correct.
That's a big negative of her talking.
No one in Chicago says daddy.
Like, imagine calling your dad daddy as like
in Chicago. Daddy. I can see.
Okay, if it's in the South, is the daddy. But I don't even call my dad daddy.
If they have just super thick, like, Chicago accents or whatever?
Daddy. I don't even know.
We gotta fly to Atlanta.
But yeah, Rayford has this internal thought that's like, what had he done in his raising of Chloe that could make her so cautious, so careful, that she might look down her nose at what was so obvious to him? Well, sir, you fucked up and let her go to school.
That's so true.
Is what you did. You allowed her to be educated.
Yeah, you let the boy get to be raised by your wife, and instead you raised the girl, and now the girl is like you.
Yeah.
And also, bro, you're in the fucking rapture tribulation zone. Dude. Things are very strange. Have an open heart here.
Yeah, he then, Rafer, I don't even remember if this is just like his internal like monologue going on in his brain where he's talking about this, but he says that the world had become ugly overnight.
Yeah.
Now that the Christians are gone. And this is like such a like right-wing fantasy of like, there's looting and everyone's being bad because the Christians aren't around to keep things right. Yeah, no,
I
mean,
I forget if we've talked about it on this show or not, but like, I know we talked about it other places. I'd like to bring it up whenever I can, but like, you know, people are not as bad as we think they are.
They're really truly not.
Like, even me, who is like so black-pilled on our existence, it's like, it's not, people aren't really as bad as we think they are. The systems for which they interact with are really bad. So during Hurricane Katrina, there was a lot of instances of people helping out. That being said, dear listener, do you know who was going around murdering people vigilante style?
Ooh.
Oh, it was the right-wing Christians.
Yeah.
There's many videos of them just gleefully talking about how many people they shot.
I like, this is a thing that I have finally, after 35 years on this goddamn earth, have come to realize. If the right wing is accusing someone of something, they are already doing it and have been doing it.
Yeah.
So, like, that's the thing. Like, yeah, they're like, oh, well, obviously, if all the Christians are gone, everyone's gonna act out and be just murdering and doing shit. And it's like, so what you're saying to me is that if you thought God wasn't real, you would become a serial killer.
No, I mean, that's that.
And that's terrifying to me.
Yeah, the implication consistently is if we didn't have these goddamn bars of society, humans would just be murdering each other. And I should make a small addendum. Of course, there was many, many instances of looting and things like that by, you know, lots of people during the Katrina thing. But I also recommend never learning about what actually happened during Katrina, because it'll turn you into the goddamn Joker.
Well, what I was gonna say is, can I immediately put a little asterisk on the word looting? Because, what does that mean? Like, people looting, like, when it's like, well, this store is like filling with water and they're taking food. Like,
right. No, that was the garbage cans, you know, soggy crackers.
Yeah. Like, it's just, it's the way that people frame things.
Yes.
Makes a huge difference. And I would just say to everyone, like, question some of these narratives in general when you hear them.
Yeah.
Like, the way that people talked about, like, Portland, Oregon, like, last summer, like, when the protests and things are like, oh my God, it's a war zone. It's not. It's really not. Like, people, in the same with St. Louis, people talk about St. Louis being scary and dangerous, and it's like, yeah, if you're, like, a racist, I guess. I don't know. Like, I don't know. I think it's such a, like, right-wing-brained way of, like, thinking about the world.
Totally.
And it's and I really, truly, I think it comes back to, like, hey, in your heart of heart, you know that if you didn't believe that you would be literally burned for eternity for doing this shit, you'd be doing it. And that's very disturbing.
Yeah. Because
I don't think that anything happens after I die, and I still don't do shitty things right. like that. So.
Right. No, it's very... Move, cat. What are you doing? It's very curious to see, like, how even they would begin to formulate it in their own mind, because, like, they, I mean, we, like we said, they legitimately think that without the Bible, they have no idea why atheists don't murder and kill.
They truly don't. They find it really confusing.
And I think part of it is, like, a self-justification of, like, well, I have to justify being, you know, a Christian because it makes me such a good person. And, you know, so you wouldn't be a good person without this, even the baseline,
right,
and you
right.
believe that, like, anyone who's not a Christian, like, there's a lot of...
That to me means, like, I'm sorry, inherently you're not a good person.
Right.
If the second that a consequence is pulled away, you would do something to hurt somebody else.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you have to weirdly be a Christian to be a Christian, if I can, you know, tautle on it for a second, I think that's very, very silly. Like, I think it's very easy for people to act quote-unquote Christian without some of the boring bits, without believing in the Lord. Unless, you know, they literally think that you have to have, what, like the Holy Spirit holding you back from your bloodlust or something like that. But
like,
the implication through this, as we touch on, like, how bad the looting and, you know, people taking advantage of the chaos, Rayford literally says or thinks, is that, yeah, the world... And it did for a second kind of take me out of it of, like, would it be that bad, you know, forgetting that there are millions of Christians in America? Like, if you got rid of, like, all the Sikh people in America, it would cause a huge deal.
Right.
And if you got rid of all the fucking Christians, even though, one, we would find out how many politicians aren't, which would be kind of sick. But that being said,
that's true.
As we're finding out of how many of right-wing politicians die of COVID because they don't get the grift and they refuse the vaccines, whereas, like,
they don't understand how the grift, they don't understand how the grift works.
Exactly.
It's like, no, you're supposed to just say this shit and then live differently.
Right. So there's going to be hella.
So if you actually don't get vaccinated, you will die.
Yeah. And there's hella, you know, pastors that are getting that check, but there's plenty of them that think they have to do the whole rigmarole, and you gotta weep for them. So it did make me laugh to think, just because Christians are gone, what, 35 million people disappearing instantly? Not that big a deal to me.
Okay, well, my hateful self, you know that Twitter meme that goes around that's like what society would look like if X had or had not happened? Mm-hmm. And it's like the future of flying cars. And I'm like, that's what it, if there was a world where, like, a Christian god, like, existed, he's like an alien or whatever, and they're all like, or he's like a god amongst gods. And he does, like, okay, I'm gonna suck all my people off the earth. That would, like, how dope, I'm sorry, how dope would it be if all the evangelical, like, fundamentalist right-wing Christians were just gone from the earth? That would fucking roll.
It's unfortunate.
I wish it was real.
It's a false premise, though, because in so deleting all of them, you prove them right.
Yeah, but if they're gone, then I don't care.
But so,
it's worth it.
So in this hypothetical, there is no tribulation?
No, it's just this. God is like an alien. Like,
you guys got a lot of this part right, but, you know, Paul was on fucking mushrooms, man.
Yeah, man. We zapped his brain way too hard.
Showing him. I had this, like, growth on my elbow and kept showing him, and he, like, could not fathom my form.
The idea of Paul just actually have been, like, abducted by aliens, and they, like, probed him and stuff and made him be crazy.
It's more likely than you think.
I wish that was
It's more
real.
Likely than you think.
Ugh, anyway, sorry. That was a real tangent, but it's
not
just,
really a tangent.
Yeah, it's not really a tangent because Rayford is, like, pontificating on Andrew's brain.
Right, I mean, if they say this fact is how it would be, and we're like, I don't know about that. I mean, again, it would be devastating to...
Well, to lose just that many people.
Right.
Just
and especially how many politicians have to act Christian. There has to be so many of them that just accidentally are Christian.
There would literally be, like, three of them gone, though.
Yeah, I mean...
If you were going off, like, anyone who's sincere.
Yeah, and then the rest of them, like Marjorie Taylor Greene, would have to K-word herself and stuff like that. Or
yeah, she'd have to think of some.
There'd be a whole QAnon subgenre of like left behind Christians that are like, no, this wasn't the rapture, and everything would go back to normal in 13 seconds, and would probably be worse without our good friend the Antichrist. Like the Antichrist would.
He's got to keep it even.
Well, actually, I think nowadays, like, the Antichrist probably would be like a QAnon. And they would straight up like say, we all missed Jesus, and or like what was taken was not Jesus in the real rapture.
Right, right. It was like actually like they were bad for some reason or something.
Yeah, Kennedy's coming back.
And, oh my God. Ugh. Well, anyway, after Rayford has this mind journey about how bad everything is now because the Christians are gone, he finally sits down to talk about the rapture tape. Or not to talk about, to watch the rapture tape.
Yes.
From the pastor.
And again, thank you everyone who has sent these to us. Please continue to send them to us.
Yeah, we'll save them up. And when we actually get our Patreon started, we'll watch some.
Yeah, because I think it's going to be a lot of fun and also make us lose our minds, probably.
Oh, for sure. So yeah, so Rafer sits down to watch the rapture tape from the pastor, and we actually get real ass chunks of Bible verses in this part.
You know, they probably waited till chapter 12 as a bit of beautiful scripture numerology.
Oh, they love the number 12, 12 tribes of Israel, 12 so, disciples.
Like we said, here's where we get into like some hard shit.
Yeah. Yeah. So after he talks about the whole like Paul being like, you know, the Corinthians, like, we will all be changed and blah blah blah. Like
I have to say, the first Bible verse they include in this book is the most incomprehensible gobbledygook Bible verse I think I have literally ever seen. It is like,
I almost want to read it because it's so
no,
crazy.
Please do. It's beyond parody of how confusing it is.
Like, because that's, well, and it's funny because the pastor's like, well, this obviously means this. And I'm like, what?
Okay. And then luckily Rayford is like, this sounds like gibberish.
Yeah, he does say that. So it's 1 Corinthians 15:51-57. Behold, I tell you a mystery. We shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trumpet. For the trumpet will sound, and the dead will be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed. For this corruptible must put on incorruption, and this mortal must put on immortality. So when this corruptible has put on incorruption, and this mortal has put on immortality, then shall be brought to pass the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory. O death, where is your sting? O Hades, where is your victory? The sting of death is sin, and the strength of sin is the law. But thanks be to God, who gives us the victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. And yeah, literally, he's like, this sounds like gibberish to me.
Yeah,
which,
and
yes.
It is, I mean, yeah, I feel like they had to have a meeting like, I mean, Tim,
this is like,
don't do that one. Like, no, you
like
got
too much.
You got to start esoteric. You know, people like a little razzmatazz.
And I think this is where, like, if you don't actually, like, if you don't have the background of, like, actually reading the verses that people are talking about, you might think they're pulling from something more straightforward.
Yes.
And they're not.
No, that's the thing is, like, people always think that the end times comes directly from the book
like
of Revelation.
Like, it's spelled out, but it's
not.
It's just interpretation of it.
Yeah, like, a fuck ton of it comes from, like, Ezekiel and Isaiah.
A lot of us, yep, and they talk about that a little bit, I think. And actually, in fact, I think part of that Corinthians was quoting from Isaiah or Ezekiel. The death, where is your sting? Grave, where is your victory? That's an Old Testament
thing. We're always saying that, the Bible said.
Oh,
people are always saying this.
Yeah, so it's just, it's a good thing to remember that this is really not pulling from anything specific.
Right. And not that it super matters to you, the listener, but I think it is somewhat interesting to hit home. That is the first verse they chose to see. Oh, doesn't this make sense?
Yeah, exactly.
And
it makes no sense. And they even admit that it makes no sense.
And they're, you know, maybe I'm giving them too much credit the same way I do when I bring up the Rayford flaw thing is like, are they trying to say that the pastor wasn't as sick as he should? Like, cool, sick, parentheses, good?
Yes, yeah, not sick, derogatory.
Yeah, as he should have been, and he should have, like, done something else? I don't think so. I think there's probably an air of, no, it needs to be a little mystical, and the rapture tribulation should be mystical, whereas the path to the Lord should be easy.
See, I think that's interesting that you're thinking of it that way, because I don't even think they're that aware. I think to them, they're like, well, this is clearly what it means. Like, obviously, right?
I think there's a...
But I guess Rayford being like, it's gibberish, but it's like, well, it's gibberish if you're not saved.
I think there's a vibe of fun, weird, dork crossword puzzle, riddle solving Christians here where
it's, oh, they love that. They love solving
like,
riddles.
Why would you think in it in any other way? Like, I have found out my answer to this. Even that passage could mean anything.
It could mean
And what we know
anything.
A lot of is that a lot of the Bible was written in code so that these motherfuckers wouldn't get murdered because, one, it wasn't the Bible. These were just letters.
Right, it was literally just letters.
Letters and to like, their homies, and oftentimes not even written by the people for whom we thought wrote it. They're just like, oh, well, Paul's followers wrote for Paul when he was alive and then started writing for Paul when he was
like
dead.
In his style.
So we prayed on it and, you know, we want to make a lot of money. So now here's the Bible. It's fine. We're good.
Well, it's just also like remembering that when the New Testament was written, Christianity was not a majority religion at all. And like, yeah, these are letters. Like, it's just, okay, I can't even like fully go down it. So I wanted to bring up too. So the pastor in the tape says, depending on when you're viewing this tape, you may have already found that martial law is in effect in many places. Emergency measures trying to keep evil elements from looting and fighting over the spoils of what is left. Governments will tumble and there will be international disorder. So again, like Rayford was already thinking about looting.
Right.
And then the pastor's like, oh yeah, there's going to be some looting.
Yeah. And
it's going to be martial law.
And again, like I think I was just rolling my eyes, but if even like 50% of the politicians who say they're religious are religious. That is government collapse zone, right? Like,
totally.
We're in a King Ralph situation times 1,000.
I don't know what that means.
So Ralph is a guy, John Goodman, and he was like 37th in line to the king.
Okay.
But like everyone died.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay, yes. Like how
they're sitting on bleachers, I believe.
Like in Battlestar Galactica when the Minister of Education becomes the president.
Exactly. That's exactly the vibe here. I do kind of push back a little bit because it's like, I don't know. I think people would just kind of vibe and try to survive locally until things got their handle on it. But that being said, America has a lot of Christians and probably had more quote-unquote Christians in 1995.
Oh, for sure. They definitely did. But here's another thing, though, is just from my time experiencing conspiracy theorist-type thinkers, they love talking about martial law and things going – this is, like, so Alex Jones to me, like, and just, like, QAnon, right-wing. Like, they really think – anytime a big, like, crisis happens, that the government will use it to put in place martial law.
Right. This is the time that they wheel out the clone of Hillary Clinton.
Exactly. She's pumped full of adrenochrome. She is working with the New World Order. She's a meatbag full of Satan's soul or whatever. No, I think this is all just like so rooted in just general conspiracy theory thinking that I don't even think that they would like admit or like or understand that they're pulling from that.
Yeah,
it's just so in the water.
But I think it sort of is pulling from two ways for a couple reasons. One, it's very likely that a government, which I think is oftentimes bad, by the way, would do something to consolidate power, yada, 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 just to get through.
Okay, but again, now in COVID times, though, we've been through literally a worldwide pandemic and that shit has not happened.
Or has it? No, it hasn't.
So that's what I'm saying. Like,
we have the president tweeting, I can't do anything.
Healthcare should be for everyone. Like, sir, you are literally the president.
Well, what do you mean, Jack? I love those goddamn queers, but I can't.
I can't let them have marriage.
I can't, like, that's not my job to, like, make sure they don't get punched
it's
or whatever.
It's like, excuse me, sir, are you literally the president of the United States or not? I'm confused.
I gotta get my speedball so I can talk on mic later.
Oh, man.
That being said, too, they're also, you know, operating off of the assumption that if there's a rapture, there inherently is going to be the Antichrist.
Oh, yeah. Well, and so, we're about to get into the Antichrist,
so
actually.
It does piss me off a little bit more that, you know, even in this book that they're writing, they have complete control over.
Yeah.
They're right, which I'm like, is very stupid of me. It's like, man, I can't believe Harry Potter went to wizard school.
Tim, can you read this next quote that is from the pastor's rapture tape?
Okay.
And I want to talk about this.
I'm glad this guy's not in the book because he seems a
boring. He feels so annoying.
Strange as this may sound to you, this is God's final effort to get the attention of every person who has ignored or rejected him. He is allowing now a vast period of trial and tribulation to come to you who remain.
This is another reason why not only am I not a Christian, but I'm hostile towards Christianity because this is so fucked up to me that God's like, okay, well, I'm not going to like tell you explicitly. I'm just going to keep making your life miserable until you decide to become a Christian.
And it's such a 180 of their logic of how God and salvation works, because what God could do is return to earth and be like, hey, everybody.
Hello, I am God.
I am God.
Let me tell you the deal.
Instead, he's like ratcheting up the oven.
Yes.
And murdering more and more people because, like, I mean, it's a God, and everything that we have about gods in our media and, you know, as silly as it might say to be like, here's what they thought of Battlestar Galactica or whatever.
Well,
but like a lot of that is based off just human nature, even in sci-fi. And
right. You're just like imprinting yourself onto a god.
Right. So gods like to fuck with people, and they need their worship to sort of be self-found. So it's like God is like, okay, I'm just sticking my toe in the show everyone I'm real pool without literally like being like, all right, here I am, because then your prayers won't be worth it. But like all of you who die is I'm fine.
That's
with
on
it.
You. Do you know what this is to me? This is, I want you to want to wash the dishes.
Yes.
God is doing passive aggression at us via the rapture and the tribulation.
I did like that later in this chapter, I think, or next one. I don't remember. But basically, there's like Pastor Barnes is like, yeah, you know, I understand there's probably some of you who aren't religious because you're mad at God, and that's fair. And I'm like, yeah, say it louder. I think the implication too is that there's a subset of people in the first 3 years who know this is real but are just mad and they don't do anything about it. And then eventually a lot of people know, we're in the end times, and you know, but we don't give a shit.
We're on the other team.
Right.
We're taking the other side.
We're actively rejecting. And I guess maybe the point is you think that maybe the Antichrist has enough power to save you from the guy that is sending wormwoods.
Like maybe you think that he's the real God.
Yeah.
Cause like
I have no idea.
Yeah, and
I think he like also preaches like worship of self later on too.
Yeah, that makes sense. But like again, I thought you were gonna bring this up. I think in the next chapter they basically talk about how like, well, God has abandoned Earth to Satan. He's just letting Satan do anything. And I'm like, that's interesting to me.
There's a lot.
Was that like a thing in your church? I don't feel like.
I don't know.
Like maybe they kind of implied that, but to me that is really undercutting God. Like,
I really
but he's all powerful, so what?
No, I think you get a lot of their Bible lore in these two chapters, and I think it's kind of weird. I think
they keep talking about the supernatural, like, and I don't feel like that was ever, like, I guess I understand that the term supernatural means, like, anything outside of, like, our normal world, but I feel like describing God as supernatural is really strange.
Yeah, especially because, you know.
That feels like it's for ghosts and ghouls, not for the Lord.
For sure, like, even Holy Spirit, you don't think of it, he's not actually
He's not a ghost, a real ghost. That was very important to understand, like, in my church. It's like, he's not a ghost.
Stop calling him Holy Ghost.
He's the Holy Spirit. It's different.
But we, even when the way he talks about, like, oh, obviously all the babies are gone. And like, bro, you guys have, that shit is made up. No, like, that is nowhere in the Bible.
Oh, dude, and they talk about the, like, age, I think I cut out the bullet point where they're talking about, the, like, the age of accountability being a thing. Like, and I think that's very interesting because they're like, well, when they're like a little baby, you can't fully understand everything to be saved, so you can't do it, but you will reach an age at some point where suddenly you do understand everything, and then at that point, then Jesus can throw you to hell.
Sorry, little Billy, you're
7 years old, and you're going to spend eternity in hell now.
You saw a dead body when you were younger, so you hit your age of accountability.
Yeah.
Before your friends.
Yeah, you were actually 4. It's pretty fucked up.
Sorry, brother.
Hopefully you won't get, you know, hit by a car when you're riding your bike or whatever.
And obviously the writers have an intention in the background, and obviously the characters have an intention in the background. So it makes sense, but it's just really weird. I feel like they would have, like, a committee to make certain some of these things are consistent and sort of blandly non-denominational.
I think because I don't think they want to – I don't think they want to, like –
I don't think they want
to say there's a date or like an age or anything. Whereas
I don't think like even, well, I don't really.
I think Catholics, I thought Catholics, there is like an age. Because when you do your first communion.
Yeah, anyone that baptizes kids inherently sort of believes in this sort of, there's other reasons to do it. Don't get at me.
Yeah.
But like, there is an implication here that that's why you do it. And right. My experience is like, we didn't talk about shit like this. This was literally just the what if. This was never preached.
Right.
It was just like when people ask questions, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. They talked about the age of accountability at my church, kind of, which is probably also why I got saved when I was 5, because I was like, well, I kind of understand what they're saying, so I better do it, so I don't go to hell.
It feels like it is broadly church doctrine, right? But not the type that you, like, drop on people.
Well, and here's the thing. Because Left Behind is written by, like, just, like, generic evangelical people, this is where I think, like, fundamentalism, like evangelical Christians, are so different than Catholicism, because Catholicism does have that structure of like the top people who know what they're talking about have come together to decide this. Whereas the like evangelicals are very they're not like in a system together.
Right.
It's much more disconnected. So they can't be like, well, this is the time when this happens. It's more like, well, you just have to talk to God and
right.
like, figure that out on your own. So they keep it a lot more wishy-washy.
Right. And that's part of the reason why we enjoy so much hearing y'all's specific backgrounds, because, yeah, I mean, there's so much wishy-washy middle road stuff here. But it does always catch me off guard when they specifically say something that is like, yeah, man, that's not consistent. People don't – not everyone believes that.
And I really feel like this, like, non-centralized – that's what I was trying to look for. It's not centralized, and I think that this works so – well, with things like QAnon and like conspiracy theories, because you can't have, it's not like, there can't just be like, this is the truth. There has to be a lot of different opinions about the truth for it to keep like percolating and like, you know, evolving and like becoming powerful through time. So next, guys, finally.
Thank God.
It's time.
Thank God.
We're learning about the Antichrist now. So.
You gotta have your Darth Vader. I'm sorry.
It's like not interesting.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Nikolai Carpathia. I've been waiting for
the
you to
show
up. The
main bad guy is like a car crash. In long lines. Am I right, everybody?
So the pastor says, Scripture indicates that there will be a great lie announced with the help of the media and perpetrated by a self-styled world leader. Hmm. Let me warn you personally to beware of such a leader of humanity who may emerge from Europe.
Which is just such an insane line.
So specific. What are you saying?
But that's, again, because they're pulling from all this weird shit of like, all right, Macedonia and like this shit like that doesn't exist anymore.
I swear it's also just like straight up conspiracy theory stuff of like, oh, like the UN and like all that shit's in Europe and we don't trust Europe.
Oh, yeah.
Like Americans like don't trust Europeans.
I can't imagine.
They're like not godly.
I can't imagine what the vibe is overseas about the rapture.
Oh,
if you told me only,
like, what's going on in Germany? Like, what do like the German evangelicals think about this?
Well, depends. I mean, when I went to Germany and stayed with some people, some missionaries from our church, they basically implied that like very few people in Germany are Christians, including all the people who go to church every day and believe like old school religion stuff.
It's like, you know, we gotta do our rituals and, and it's just, that's what you do.
So,
it's historic or whatever.
I think it's a little silly to be like, yet again, these people who are like Catholic adjacent, right? Are not Christians or whatever their implication was, but that was like explicitly said to me when I was driving in the car with him. I was like, oh, weird. So like, if you're an evangelical in Germany, there's a non-zero chance that you were got by the Americanized style of like charismatic worship or whatever. So you might be the exact same. And you might be a little freak because you live in an area that doesn't really deal with that.
So you are a minority there. So you're doing the like, I'm persecuted kind of.
Right.
Versus America, where like the majority of people are some flavor of that kind of Christianity.
Right.
Like grew up in it or grew around it. But culturally, you're that.
But it's like these people, they're not talking about people that are atheists. They're talking about people who believe in God the wrong way.
Yes. Yes.
And aren't little freaks about it. So I imagine the throughput on people who, you know, like the Venn diagram of people who believe in the rapture and aren't, you know, fucking freaks has to be so small.
Oh my God. Like just absolutely a sliver because in the middle of the Venn diagram.
It's not in the Bible. This is not
normal.
In the Bible.
Also, can we please talk about the connection between like the media will sell this to you?
Oh yeah.
So that again is also super right wing QAnon, like don't trust the mainstream media. They're telling you lies and they're going to try to, they're going to stand up the Antichrist.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, that's a,
Like, I immediately go into Alex Jones' voice when I talk about it, because that's, like, literally, like, it's the same. They're the same. They're from the same place.
Take a drink. The same shit's happening, right, man? God. That's part of the reason why the draw to do this podcast was so interesting nowadays, because, yeah, the same shit is happening.
More than ever.
And part of that is because these are the people who have been behind the scenes, caballing and making everyone fucking maniacs.
Yeah. Pastor also says, Tim, can you read this quote?
That's why I warn you to beware now of a new leader with great charisma trying to take over the world during this terrible time of chaos and confusion. This person is known in the Bible as the Antichrist.
Woo! Dun, dun, dun! Woo! Woo, Antichrist, we love you!
It's also funny because, like, it's obviously Nikolai Carpathia, but, like, he's been, you gotta give the man his props. He's been behind the scenes grinding out that anti-war message.
He's been slicing and dicing and wheeling and dealing in Romania and just biding his time until he can take the national stage. Yeah, maybe take a dirt bath.
Maybe, who's to say? I do love that he's like, yeah, you have a second chance, friends. No worries. That being said, if you're a Christian now, they're going to fucking kill you for fun.
You might need to become a martyr.
Do you like rocks being tossed at you or being beheaded? What's up?
Tim, here's the thing. Christians do.
They do.
They are nutting over being martyrs at all times.
They are sexually pissing and shitting thinking about this idea. Like, obviously, they don't want to be left behind, but something that is so American about the evangelical movement is this idea of martyrdom. And
they love to be a martyr. They love to be persecuted for their beliefs, even though they're the mainstream.
Right. And that's why they're like, oh, the church is shrinking because of the attacks on the left. And they're like, no, church is shrinking because it's boring and weird.
Church is shrinking because you guys fucking suck.
And you guys are bad. You're the worst people.
And it's not true.
And it's not true. And you're the worst people. If you weren't the worst, if you guys were the best people, then it'd be like, okay, that kind of, whatever. You have really good barbecues. It's pretty boring. But the people are really nice. The majority of Christians are very, very bad.
Yeah.
And I say that flippantly because so many people, you know, would respond of like, well, then they're not real Christians. Sorry, there's no such thing.
Tough shit, then. That's what they identify themselves as. And to me, they're all Christians. So if you say you're a Christian, you're a Christian. Sorry.
Yeah. We don't play the real Christian bullshit.
Because it's literally a logical fallacy.
Yep.
The pastor also is like, yeah, there's gonna be World War III. There'll be a thermonuclear war.
But I'd love that Irene randomly went to this New Hope church who has the most insane pastor.
The most pilled pastor of all time.
Who's writing fan fiction all the fucking time. Like, oh man, like this freaking prepper ass pastor.
Oh my God, and for sure. He's got all the MREs in his basement. Although maybe he's not though, because he's like, well, I'm going to be raptured. So
yeah, I'm going to get MREs and booby trap them so that
the sinners will not be able to get to them.
But again, this is not just this character saying it. This is the book saying it to you.
Yes.
And sure, some of it is to make it a little sexier, a little dangerous. Like, but come on, man. This is exactly what they think is going
to
happen.
They do. And like, again, this is what I want to stress people that are listening to this. If you did not grow up evangelical, I want to make sure you understand, they literally believe this is going to happen.
And they don't care. They love the idea that a thermonuclear war will wipe out millions when they're not here.
And I think that, honestly, like, we're recording this on August 13th, 2022. Like, literally a few days ago, a random dude was, like, trying to attack, like, the FBI because they went and, like, search Trump's fucking hotel.
First of all, king shit. More people should be doing it. That being said,
we love it.
Poor reason.
Well, but it's just like, I'm just saying, like, those people are like, oh, hell yeah, it's time to go. I got all my 75 guns.
Right.
I got my MREs. I'm ready for the apocalypse to happen. They're excited about it.
This is why we call Christianity, not ironically and not to be mean, a death cult.
It is a death cult. They want to die. They want other people to die. They want collapse to happen. They want the World War III.
Yeah.
And that is why politics in America are the way they are, because they literally like, well, it doesn't matter about climate change because God's going to come back.
Totally.
And the earth is going to be destroyed. So who gives a shit?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
We have great news, though, everybody.
Yeah?
Rayford becomes a Christian.
Oh, guys, he's saved. He's all set now.
And I was a little let down by how straightforward the prayer was here. Yeah. It was just basically like, yeah, I'm a sinner. I believe Jesus died for me.
I'm a nasty, dirty little sinner.
I'm a dirty little boy. And then, like, Rayford gets done. He's like, well, that was easy, but I just kind of want to talk to God more. So he's like, I'm a little freak.
I'm going to confess all my sins to you,
I'm
God.
I'm a little dirty little bitch. All
yeah.
Right?
No, and he likes it. I think this is also, is this like, I'm about to say something really mean.
Okay.
Whatever. Being a Christian is cuck energy to me.
I mean, my man gets down on his hands and knees.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jesus.
There's nothing about prostrating yourself before someone else. Like, sure, other religions do it. And
that's homosexual behavior.
And I'm capturing them with, yeah.
You ever wash a dude's feet? Gay.
That is gay to me. It's crazy. But, you know, whatever. I think it's wild that Rayford's like, I guess I'll get on my knees and fucking bow down with my face
in
the
floor.
It
took, like, half the fucking book to get saved.
Yeah. Ray.
I'm glad it's done now.
Ray, do better.
Come on, dude.
Well, we have punished Ray now, so he's going to be a little more annoying and weird.
Well, now he's a Christian, so he's going to be even worse.
Yeah.
Which is definitely true. So now we do a quick cut to Buck.
Cool.
And guys, he's going to actually meet with our Antichrist, Nikolai Carpathia.
So that's how it's going, baby. All the threads are coming together.
Steve Plank got him a meeting.
Yes. Yes. Steve Plank picked him up and, he's like, hey man, I'm going to give you a freaking thing. You know, I'll pick you up from the freaking airport tomorrow or today. I don't know what time is anymore.
Yeah, well, Buck is pretending to be George Oreskovich or whatever the fuck he's doing.
Thank you for letting me talk to Carpathia.
I am a Russian man.
It's Buck, by the way.
Like, Buck.
Yeah, I'm Steve. I understand it, you weirdo.
Buck has this thought to himself. If there's one guy who's above these international terrorists and bullies and even the dirt at the London Exchange and Scotland Yard, it will be this Carpathia.
Didn't he, like, not give a shit about Carpathia, like, four chapters ago?
Well, no, he was the one that was trying to convince Steve Plank that he was a big deal.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah, so it was actually the opposite, but now Steve Plank is, like, full yet.
Which
we're going to get into a little bit more in the next
chapter. Like Buck is the media.
He is the media.
Sorry, Buck.
Now we go back to Rayford, and he is so excited about the Lord that he stays up late reading up all the Gospels.
That has to be so weird to read all the Gospels back to back.
Yeah.
To be like, wait, they're saying the same thing, but it's kind of different, though. Is that bad?
Like, wait, they seem to contradict each other.
Wait a second. The internet doesn't exist widely. I mean, it does, but, you know, let me go on AOL.com. Is it bad that Mark is different than Matthew? No,
like,
it's fine.
I don't know about you guys, but I know for me, the first crack in the whole facade was realizing that the Bible contradicts itself. So yeah. I actually feel like reading and studying the Bible is the number one way to unchristian yourself.
Is exegesis? Is that the comparing to?
Exegesis is like just doing like deep. Dives, like
part
understanding
of that can be,
the meaning yeah. of it. Yeah, comparing
is there
it.
Is there a more specific term for taking two stories and comparing how they are?
I don't know off the top of my head. Yeah. I mean, I think that is.
It can fall under exegesis.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
Because if you want to know a lot about this event, let's say Jesus raising Lazarus,
yeah.
Then you're going to touch base with the other accounts.
You're going to read all the accounts.
And then they're like, Why is it only in the queer one?
Yeah.
Isn't Mark kind of fruity? Isn't Mark the one that's kind of fruity?
One of them is kind of fruity. One of them is like, Jesus is constantly hanging out with his best dude friend.
And I think that's the...
They're washing each other's feet.
I think only one of them has the resurrection. Don't...
Guys,
maybe not.
It's been a long time. I haven't like read in the New Testament. And the New Testament was never my specialty. TBQH. I was more of an Old Testament gal.
I must have said, "Don't correct me. Don't correct me." But again,
but no, please don't correct me. There's differences. It's been a long time.
I don't care. I'm neutral because
yeah,
I just don't care. But I think it is sort of interesting the idea of reading all four back to back, and I don't know how long that would take.
I don't think he could do it in a night. I think it would take longer than that.
Because there's like,
and he's also like,
45
what's the Bible? Like, he doesn't know anything. He's going to be constantly like looking up definitions of shit.
Yeah.
So like, what are they talking about?
I think you just have to go smooth brain and just be like, all right, I guess this dude healed a girl that was on her period or something. I don't know.
he put some demons in pigs and made them jump on a cliff. Okay.
This guy's, he beat the shit out of a tree.
Yeah, he just fucking killed it.
I think it's cool, though.
That's pretty sick of him. So, yeah, so a thing that came up in this chunk of the chapter to me was that Rafer's all like, okay, cool. Well, now I'm going to go to heaven with my wife and son, but I really want Chloe to be there, too. And to me, it's like, how could you possibly be happy in heaven if you know your sweet daughter Chloe is roasting in hell for eternity?
Yeah.
Like, does God just, like, brainwash you when you go to heaven, like, in Christian, like, concepts? Or, like, do you just become like, well, God said she should burn forever, so I'm actually happy about this.
Right. That's a good point. Like, there is no sadness in heaven, but there has to be some of, like, I'm so happy, but why... I'm so sad that you, that
my beloved daughter Chloe is
even
roasting.
If it's like a pity sad, but that's sort of part of the vague, like this isn't preach, but this is what they say when you ask them too many questions. It's like, well, yeah, you probably don't remember anything. You probably don't remember your silly daughter Chloe. You're happy to see your beautiful wife.
Which is crazy to me, because what you're saying is like you can't acknowledge reality in order to be happy in this scenario.
Interesting.
So weird. So Rayford goes to church. Chloe's like, no thanks. I'm not gonna go with you.
Sounds bad and boring. I might watch the video, but that also sounds bad and boring.
And Chloe, you're correct.
Yeah.
Chloe,
you are in the end times, so I'm with you, girl. Wait a little bit longer, but
yeah.
Like, I just had the thought again just about our conversation in previous episodes, like, fuck. I'm in the rapture. I have to be a Christian now.
Yeah, you gotta be. But the thing is, God knows if you don't say it sincerely, so you can't just say the words. It doesn't work. You gotta mean it. So, Rafer goes to church, and basically it's the same spiel that Bruce Barnes has already told everybody.
Oh, I love the fact that he was not on the pulpit where anyone could see him.
Like, what are you saying?
He's standing,
I don't deserve to be in the pulpit.
He's standing on the ground in front of the first pew with a microphone, so a full 60% of this audience can't see him, which is like packed to the gills.
Okay, also, like, other people stand in the pulpit, you dumbass.
You dumbass. You probably stood in the pulpit, you dumbass.
I've stood at the pulpit before. Like, if you're, like, doing, like, a, like, the choir director would be there, whoever's, like, leading
Jennifer,
songs.
It kind of sounds like you're bringing glory upon yourself right now.
Yeah, you know, that was a big issue at our church. I can't remember if we've talked about this on this podcast, but I'm just going to do it anyway. One of the first times Tim came to visit the church that I grew up in, somebody performed. And of course, you know, someone performs, they get done.
They did a good job.
What are you going to do?
Clap.
You're going to clap for them. Not in my church.
No.
Not in my church.
Eerie silence.
If you clap, that's bringing glory to yourself, not to God. So the only thing you can say is amen.
I think it's...
And so the person performed, and I could see that Tim was revving up to clap, and I reach my hand over to be like, no.
Yeah.
You
slow
can't.
Motion, grab my hand.
No.
And also I have a super loud clap.
Oh my God, Tim is the loudest, I think you should go in the Guinness Book of World Records for your shattering clap. So that would have
saved
terrible.
Me from getting fucking mercy killed.
Yeah, they would have definitely stoned you if you had done it. So while all this is happening, Bruce Barnes says a thing that I think is very interesting. He says, I know many of you may still be skeptical. You may believe what happened was of God, but you still don't like it, and you resent him for
Hell
it.
Yeah.
If you would like to come back and vent and ask questions this evening, I will be here. But I choose not to offer that opportunity this morning because so many here are brand new in their faith, and I don't want to confuse the issue. So what you're saying is I can't actually be truthful about things because people might not believe anymore if they hear it.
Don't yell. I agree with him because this is the first Sunday after the goddamn rapture where everyone's walking in like zombies. I think you kind of have to keep it very focused.
I guess, but to me, I'm like, but that's the crux of it. If I can't get these questions answered, then I do not want to be saved.
This is even though I agree with him, this does remind me of the time on like a fucking Thursday of science class and that we weren't going to have it on Friday. I was like, yeah, but real quick, I know that we just got done doing the cocaine chapter, but I need to know what are the downsides of smoking marijuana. I didn't say it quite like that.
And, like, this was at your Christian school?
Yeah.
And, it's like, excuse me, it seems like weed is rad.
Well, I didn't say that.
But underneath.
Right.
You're like, so what's the catch?
What's the catch? Because it really just seemed like, okay, these hard boys, sure. Yeah.
I get it. I get it. That's bad.
That's not
meth, we don't like it.
But weed doesn't seem that bad. And also,
it's just a plant, bro.
But Miss Hintz hated me. And
because you were asking questions?
No, she just thought it was annoying and she would talk shit about me.
What? Yeah. Good teacher? Oh my god. Yeah, I'm gonna go fight her and punch her.
I think she was just an angry person that was a lesbian and couldn't
That couldn't be because she was at a Christian
school. Her and her roommate.
I was ready to kick her ass and now I feel sad.
Yeah, I mean there's a handful of quote unquote stereotypes here that probably are unchill. But I think there's whatever. I think it's a possibility, and regardless.
They exist for a reason.
I mean, there's a lot of people in the Christian faith who are politely flaming and ignore it.
All the organists at all the churches across the South.
Do you know why Southern people sound the way they do? It's so that the gay people can go there and not get in trouble.
Yeah, it's like everyone.
Well, I just love you so much.
Yeah, they just sound like that. They're like the guy that was my piano teacher who lived by himself with his mom, and it was like Mr. Harris was definitely gay. Brother. He was definitely gay.
It's like no shade if that's how you want to live your life, but. If you're doing this just because you don't want God to be mad at you, come on. I'm weeping over here. Anyways, I was like, hey, man, I know that the rapture just happened, but I really need to know what the negatives. Because we talk about like the vague. Yeah, it's like, how it was in parts. It was like, okay, here's the vague part. Like, actually, how you might encounter it, you know? Like, is it in a plant? Is it in edible? Is it in a melted down the spoon for, like, some of the various other ones? And I was literally like, what are the downsides? And she was like, wait till next week. And just being, like, shooting at me. I'm like, it is a little weird that when we're in the drug chapter of our science health book, you are not hitting home the negatives of the most common one.
Yeah, that feels to me...
Before the weekend. Because I knew I was going to hang out with my cousin who smokes weed and was going to offer me weed. And I wanted to know.
I really sincerely want to know if this is bad for me because I'm kind of thinking about doing it.
So weirdly, because I was such a P word and she didn't tell me, I didn't do it.
You're like, I can't do it because it might be bad for me.
And then I came, you know, next week. I'm like, that's it.
Really?
Really?
Like, it just makes you, like, kind of, like...
What if you're near a banana bread, dear children?
And you eat too much of it!
You'll get a tummy ache. Like, okay.
What if you sit down on the couch and then you don't want to leave it? Oh, no, the horrors.
I feel like even with my weak child Christian brain, I was kind of, like, mad about it.
This
like,
kind of seems stupid.
Maybe I should have smoked the weed there.
You probably should have.
Maybe I should. I don't know. My cousin's kind of a wild guy.
So... Let's wrap this chapter up real quick. Raper goes to lunch with Bruce Barnes. They decide to become BFFs.
That was really weird because you realize that the book lets you... Sometimes books do this thing where I do point it out that to even point it out is a little stupid because it's like, oh, isn't it interesting that the main character of this book has interesting things happening to them?
That's
why they're the main character and not that other guy.
It's like, this book is boring. Nothing's happening.
Ray is the main character because of the things for which happened to him. Yeah. Happened to him, you dummy.
And he's got that pilot charisma.
That's true. But
Bruce Barnes like, I need him as my friend.
It did feel a little weird that Bruce was always like, I need you on my team, baby.
Please come hang out with me. I need a friend.
I need you to be one of my deacons. And Ray's like, I'll do it, but as long as there's no leadership. Cool. But then he's also like, oh, by the way, I've talked to a lot of other people. And I was like, okay, that's fine.
Yeah. He's just one of the crew.
It was interesting that on the most important Sunday of many people's lives, Rey was the one chosen. But besides that, you know, again, it's a book.
I mean, Bruce, he just misses vibes with him, you know?
Rey's cool.
I mean,
he's hot. He's tall.
He's a pilot.
It's
pretty cool. And then Raver gets a call from Hattie that's like, "Oh my God, Buck is dead. He's dead. He's dead." Well,
yeah,
no, he's not dead.
He gets home and he's like, "I'm gonna tell Chloe." And then Chloe's like, "This crazy hysterical woman called.
This shrieking woman called."
Yeah, and yet another weird interaction with Hattie being like, "Remember that guy?" And then Ray's like, kind of, no. Yeah.
Like, why is she telling him this? Like, does she have no other friends?
It feels like...
they wrote her to exist with no other friends.
It feels like Hattie knows she's in a book and she's writing Buck Rey fan fiction.
Yeah.
And she keeps wanting to, like, connect. Like, oh my God, it was so funny if you went to that coffee shop.
Like, wow. Yeah.
Chapter 13!
The beginning of this chapter is just breathtaking to me because... Buck is chilling at JFK Airport writing his own extremely annoying
this
obituary.
This is so weirdly self-indulgent for a fake character.
So crazy. This is just nails why Buck is a Gary Stewart. I'm sorry. I'm supposed to believe that this dude won a Pulitzer at the Boston Globe before he started working at Global Weekly when he was 25, because he's been at Global Weekly. He's 30. He's been there for 5 years. And before he came to the Global Weekly, he'd already won a Pulitzer at 25. Mm. Bullshit. I don't believe it. It's not possible.
Do you think that the very next year, Stephanie Welsh won at the age 22? Isn't that interesting?
I mean, I'm sure there are people who've won a Pulitzer that are young.
Yeah, but they're probably like really boring and not worth being in a sick book about the apocalypse.
Buck is always just the best boy at every single thing he tries. And
it's also funny because
I hate it.
Boston Globe is always like, you know how bad the church is? Let's fucking get them.
Yeah, like doing like investigative journalism.
That being said, it was the Catholic Church, but whatever.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, there's a whole... Oh, the other thing I want to talk about in this is that the obituary blames the explosion on Northern Irish terrorists. Like, okay, I guess. Like,
and your note here says the troubles last until 1998.
Yeah, so I guess it's like still kind of in that time, but
yeah,
really?
Yeah. I mean, that's fair. I guess that is a sort of when does Dairy Girls take place?
I mean, it's around that time.
Okay, so that's
fair. It's like the 90s. Yeah. You know, it's because this is like 94, 95.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, and it's a vague, probably like 97 comes out 95, right? Or like 2000 or something like that. We don't know because it's a different world, for sure. But yeah,
I just thought it was funny they had to get in the like, well, it was Northern Irish terrorists.
Yeah, which is
okay.
I don't know. It's barely worth even figuring it out, other than being like, yeah, this book came out at a different time.
Yeah,
that's why there's VHSs are to Irish car bombs as, you know, whatever.
It just made my eyebrow go up, like, okay, like, you're just trying to be like, oh, well, what could cause an explosion in England? Northern Irish terrorists, I guess.
Well, they're also trying to cover up the death because, you know, my man knows that his Scotland Yard guy was murdered. So
right.
He's like, yes, boy, I will cover it up and say that those dang Irish are up to their old tricks.
They're up to their old bomb tricks again. Then we flip over to Rayford, and he's decided to tell Chloe that he had a crush on Hattie for some reason? Like,
there is
why
this,
are there, you saying this?
There's a weird vibe of, you know, reconciliation that does have some trauma dumping to it.
I mean, I don't want to know
both negative and positive, but doing it to your children is a little weird. That being said, it's incredibly important for non-freaks like Rayford to do as well, so it feels like a bad idea right now, but it really literally feels like I just became a Christian, and just like I annoyed God with all my sins, I need to annoy my daughter.
I need to unload on my daughter
for some reason.
And tell her who was making my dick hard. Like, why are you saying this?
So when I jacked off, I didn't think of your mom.
I was thinking of this other girl who's like a little bit older than you.
Yeah.
Just like the, but anyway, so the thing is, like, this is like such a big deal in this chapter because Raver's like, I am going to tell Chloe that I was lusting after another woman. But then like the conversation is like about something different. He hasn't even like gotten to that point yet. So they talk about how, like, Chloe agreed to go to the skeptics meeting at church, but she left halfway through because she's like, this is bullshit.
And I'm mad as fuck that we didn't have a scene from that.
Yeah, meeting. Chloe asking, like, really good questions, and Bruce being like, oh, I don't know.
And then people just being pissed, like, they know that there's no good answer and just being dicks about it. Like, yeah. I actively want more people to die, and I know that God is real, and then I'll
God
probably
is real, and he fucking
be,
sucks.
I'm going to be super safe and wear, like, a bike helmet at all times, but I'm just angry.
Yeah, so they have a general conversation, and where, once again, Chloe makes extremely good points that Rafer does not have answers for. Mm-hmm. There's a part, I don't understand all that either, Rafer said, but like Bruce said last night, we live in a fallen world. God left control of it pretty much to Satan. Oh, brother, she said. Do you wonder why I walked out? Yeah. She's right. She's fucking right. Like, ooh, well, God's in control, but he let Satan do bad stuff. Because...
it's such a fucking cop-out answer to say that things are bad on Earth because of Satan. When you believe in God. It is such,
like,
an insane thing.
Is he
thing
not
to say.
More powerful than Satan? Then he's letting him do that, which means... it's his fault.
But
I'm sorry.
Satan was God's boyfriend, so he is kind of like, all right.
Yeah. This is where I was joking with Tim earlier because I saw some tweets going around recently. And they were like, we have to bring back internet atheism where we talk about the flying spaghetti monster and stuff like that. And
your,
like,
Sky Daddy and shit.
Sky Daddy. And I'm like, honestly, I do think we were too nice to evangelical Christians. We were like, oh, like, you know, you do your thing and I'll do my thing. No, I'm sorry. We need to shame them more often because this is what they make and they should feel ashamed for it. There's another thing that's really interesting to me in this chapter, which is that there's this huge emphasis, and this is like throughout the book, that you don't need to understand something to believe it. And I think that is at the core of why evangelical Christianity is so fucked up and why it's so dangerous. Because to them, the whole, like, oh, you just have to take it by faith. And, like, maybe it's not logical, but you believe in it. And that is good in and of itself.
Yeah.
It's like,
meanwhile, also saying that the Boreans in the Bible are really good because they kept asking questions. Because they're not just taking...
right.
The apostles work for it. And
there's,
it's
a,
like,
line.
Okay, it's good when they do it. It's bad when you keep doing it because you're annoying me and we have to get to,
like,
the church.
You should only ask questions if your desire is for it to make Christianity real.
Yes.
If you ask a question with doubt in your heart, that's bad.
If you are asking because you both want to end in the same location, which is God is good and stuff, then that's good.
Like, or if you're trying to do, like, apologism where you're like, well, the atheists all say this thing and I need an argument against it.
Yeah. And when
that's the only kind of questions that they are okay with.
Yeah. And when I was a Christian, my thought on the matter was, I mean, do I really want to be associated with an other, like, a above the world, other dimension deity who works in mysterious ways that I can fathom? I don't know. I don't think I necessarily want to be part of a religion that, like, figured God out. But that feels also like a cop-out as well.
Yes, I don't know. I don't know. It just feels like, to me, this is all just such bullshit. Because it's like, so you want to not have evidence for the things you're saying.
Yeah,
that's all I can hear. That's,
brother,
all I can hear.
It's faith, baby. You need faith. You don't like faith? That's fucked up.
I'm like, wow, you're going to hell. Next, Steve Plank picks up Buck in disguise from the airport. Yeah, Buck's like got like 2 days of a beard growth and blah, blah, blah. And they have a little combo about Carpathia. And all of a sudden, guys, Steve Plank is all in on Nikolai Carpathia.
Oh, fuck. The media. At it again.
They're at it again. Can you read this little bit from Steve here?
Carpathia is impressive, Steve conceded. He's handsome as a young Robert Redford, fifth time mentioned.
They won't stop talking about Robert Redford. Why? Tim LaHaye, you have a crush on him?
Calm down.
Hey, stop being horny for Robert Redford.
And this morning he spoke in 9 languages. So fluently you'd have thought each one was his native tongue. The media is eating him up.
Uh-oh, guys, remember when the pastor was saying that the media would help the Antichrist?
Yeah, we're in it, gang. This is where they're, like, setting it up and stopping vague and coy. It's like the previous paragraph. There's going to be this motherfucker the media likes, and man, like, he's going to do some government stuff. And then next chapter is like, my name's Steve, I work for the media, and I love this guy.
And I love the Antichrist. this part is extra funny because Buck is like, no, hold on a second, Steve. Which languages Is it that Nikolai Carpathia speaks? Oh, what? It turns out that it's the six languages that the United Nations plus three languages from his own country? Wow.
Seems like he's kind of a UN simp that wanted to just be there one day. I don't trust him.
Sounds like maybe he's looking to be in charge of the New World Order.
Feels like he was like a little 10-year-old being like, Daddy, teach me Mandarin so I can one day rule the UN and sacrifice a pig on an altar.
He's young Sheldon, but the Antichrist.
That's so offensive, Jennifer, that I don't even have time to begin.
Well, am I wrong? Just saying.
I can't with this.
All right, let's go. I've upset him too much. We have to cut back to Rayford who's flying to Atlanta. Because Rayford, there's like, it came up in like earlier chapters, like he's flying to Atlanta and Chloe's just going to like ride with him in the airplane for some reason.
It's fun to ride with Daddy.
It's like you're not even like near him. Like, well, why are you doing
remember,
this?
Remember, this is 1995 where you could like walk in with a gun and a bowl of like clam chowder.
That's true. Like, here are all my liquids. They're way bigger than 3 ounces.
Well, one of the most anachronistic things of this chapter or of this book, way more than like his weird modem, is the fact that they have a 2-hour layover in Chicago, which is more than enough time leave the airport and get food.
Yeah, that also made my brain break. But then I was remembering, this is pre-9/11. You maybe were able to do that then.
The things that we have given up, dear listeners, it wasn't that long ago.
The humiliation of taking your shoes off.
Left Behind was written in a better world.
In a pre-9/11 world. So they drive to Atlanta, or drive, they fly to Atlanta.
They drive the plane to Atlanta.
And then they get in a cab to go to lunch and have, like, the weirdest interaction with this random woman who's a cab driver, which is very progressive of them to make a lady a cab driver.
Yeah, I'm surprised they were like, oh, she's black because it's Atlanta. I'm doing it again. I'm a good guy.
I wasn't even thinking that.
No, I'm saying I'm glad.
I'm surprised they didn't. Well, she had a very fake, like, southern accent. Like, she said, like, over yonder. And, like, right. You know, like, I guess people do say that, because I don't buy it.
Because I'm a fool, or maybe I was distracted by Jennifer, I was like, who in Chicago speaks like this?
No, Tim, they're in Atlanta.
Which makes a lot more sense, because they live in Chicago.
Yeah, they live there. Yeah. The cab driver's like, hey, can I take you out of the way to show you this fucked up parking garage where all the cars are stuck in them?
Incomprehensible.
Like, why? Why did this happen?
Hi, there's a cool dead bug. You want to go see?
Yeah, that's really. Was he so cool? Was he a dead body?
The implication is shit like this happens everywhere. But this one was so bad, this parking garage, because of a baseball game was letting out at the time. Why is this here?
Why is she showing this?
Here.
Like, what is this even, like, what are they, like, what is the point? What is the point?
I mean, she seems folksy and chatty, so maybe she's like, I just want to look at the fucked up car garage.
I mean, that does seem on brand for a cab driver. Like, cab drivers, you just don't know. Like,
you never know what they're up to.
You don't know what you're going to end up to. But I think the actual point of this part is her basically being like, yeah, I believe in Jesus and I'm saved now. You would be crazy if you didn't believe it.
And Rayford is like, wait a second. You're here, he says internally, and you're a Christian and you don't feel weird about talking about trying to get people to become Christians like I am.
I gotta be more bold, like this lady like, cab driver.
Who's a cab driver, parentheses lady.
Yeah. So that happens and has like no impact on anything. All.
Yeah, very, very weird. It still feels very much like, if you don't believe in God right now, you're an idiot. Like this character I invented.
Rayford has his little special lunch to be like, okay, Chloe, I was jacking off Daddy, okay? I'm sorry. And Chloe's, like, really pissed about it, which also is, like, kind of confusing to me. I don't know. Like, it's like, okay, well,
I think it's a traumatic thing to hear about in one of the most emotional half weeks of your life.
I mean, your mom's
weird, gone.
But, like, why would you tell her? Why are you saying this? Right after she just lost her mom, like, by the way, I wasn't super into her sexually, so I just needed to be honest with you and let you know.
Because
why are you saying this?
Because he's basically confessing his sin to her so that he feels better. Like, but he didn't really do anything.
Like, bro, this is not the Catholic Church. You don't have to do confession. Right. Say it to God.
He didn't talk about necking. He didn't tell her about that, the little freak. So she says, so now you're going to switch from hitting on her to preaching at her? And Rayford wanted to punch her in the throat.
He literally, like, in the text, it's like he wanted to slap her for saying that. And it's like, wow, I thought you were a Christian.
Because she's making fun of him, being like, are you telling me this because you're going to go fuck her now? And he's like, what the fuck? How dare you?
How dare you say that?
I'm going to marry someone else in the book, I guess.
I am your father, and I am telling you about being horny for another woman, but how dare you imply?
I have needs, and your mom was such a fucking weirdo.
She was so frigid.
She wouldn't suck it anymore.
You're a bitch.
Can you blame daddy? And, you know, Chloe is like, I did bad things too. Don't ask.
Don't ask me.
Don't ask.
You know, it was like, I had one sip of Goldschlager.
Yeah, she had.
You know, at Stanford.
Yeah, she like kissed a girl, maybe.
Oh, yeah. I don't even think this book is even like conceiving of that.
Like, yeah, she probably had a natural light.
I'm actually really curious now. Does homosexuality come up like at all in this book series?
It has to, right?
I don't know that it will. I think they just like ignore that it's a thing. Hmm. Like they might like vaguely be like, it's evil.
But, right. Like I have to feel like Carpathia in the second half of the story.
He's gonna get his hog sucked.
And
my dude.
And
by Jonathan, what is his name? Jonathan
Franzen.
Stonegal, oh. Todd Cawthorn are all, they're doing an orgy with the Antichrist.
Well, I mean, yeah, later in the book, they kind of go through a list of things that are evil, like gambling and strip clubs and rock and roll music. So I can only imagine that there's like boys and girls, or like boys and boys and girls can get married now, by the way.
I'm sure it comes up, but I do think it's interesting. I would not be surprised if it doesn't come up that much, because I don't think they want to acknowledge it at all.
What if one of the tribulation force is a gay couple, and everyone's like, we accept you, actually.
No, that's not going to happen.
No, not in a million years.
No, if you're gay, you're going straight to hell.
Yeah, it's bad. It's icky in the Bible.
Chloe is, like, judging Rayford, and he's like, listen, I want to meet with her and hopefully get her saved. Chloe's like, okay. Whatever.
Do weird. I need to leave the room while you ravish her sexually? And he's like, bitch, shut up.
He wants to slap her so bad.
You're being bratty right now. And she's like, all right, fair. That's fair.
I kind of am.
I am being bratty right now because I wanted to hurt you and I did it. So succeeded.
And I'm not a Christian, so I don't have to not do that.
Daddy, legally, it's bad that you wanted to slap me, but I'm allowed to be a shithead at you. Okay?
I think that Chloe needs to like really like take advantage of the situation right now and should just be really shitty to him and be like, I thought you were a Christian.
Put a fake book in one of Irene's God books of like Christians buy their daughter an iPhone.
Yeah. So, guys, we finally got into the part that I've been dying for.
Woo!
Buck and Steve are going to the UN to hear Nikolai Carpathia speak to the General Assembly.
And it's,
oh my God,
really confusing and funny and not. It's confusing why it's written the way it is, not actually confusing, because Buck is like, bro, Steve, he's not going to let me in with my fake credentials that you got from me, because he's an attention whore. And he's like, no, this guy's different. That's all I'm talking
about. He's real.
He rocks. He kicks ass.
Yeah, Steve has a crush on him now, so he's like fully on Carpathia's side.
He's not going to let me in, man. Like, no, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. And since Buck's supposed to be dead, he like basically hangs out in the back and doesn't go in the room, which is so fucking funny.
Yeah, he's like trying to lay low because he's taking advantage of the fact that everyone thinks he's dead right now.
And it's sort of a test for Carpathia because, again, he thinks that Carpathia wants to talk to Buck because Buck is such a good boy.
Right.
And has won so many Pulitzer Prizes and covers of the Global
Weekly. And Hemingway Prizes and like, oh my God, so many things.
So many things. Which by the way, the Hemingway Prize is for like covering wars. All he did was saw God kill a whole bunch of Russian people. I don't think he deserves it.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. So the plan is to watch him do the speech and then they're going to do an interview with him afterwards. So Steve and Buck go to watch the speech. Carpathia comes in. Oh my God. He's 6'2". He's blonde. He's tan. He's handsome. He has no notes. No notebook with him. And the people are gagging for him.
This is probably explicitly the weirdest part of all of these books, by the way.
It makes zero sense.
It's so cool. It's so cool. He had sideburns, which
you know, maybe 95
I don't know.
I mean, I guess people have different definitions for what a sideburn is, but I imagine they're not very long. But it was very funny, his physical description, and just Buck being like, oh, okay, this bitch, he doesn't have notes. All right.
I bet he's hot.
Oh, I bet his aide is going to give him notes. Oh, he's not.
Oh,
okay.
What? And then, okay, so things, I feel like we need a, like, running list of, like, what do we know about the Antichrist?
He's hot.
He's tall and blonde and hot and tan.
He looks like Robert Redford.
He doesn't need notes. And now we get another piece of information about how the Antichrist is, which is that he does not use contractions, and he carefully enunciates everything he says.
My name is Nikolai Carpathia.
Weird.
I am here to tell you, and then just switches to Mandarin halfway through.
Like, whoa!
Yeah, the no contraction thing was something that I have made jokes about for the past 20 years.
It's objectively hilarious. to be like, oh, wow, he's really impressive because he doesn't use contractions.
Right, they're basically...
He does not use contractions.
I think the implication here is that, like, using contractions is low speech.
I guess. But yeah, generally, everybody here at the UN is, like, nutting and crying over Carpathia, and they, like, love him and his fucking boring speech that he's giving.
Yeah.
Tim, how would you even begin to describe what this fucking speech is? Like he just... But to me, it feels like he is just saying a lot of things to prove he knows things.
Right. I mean, there's that. The answer to that question is twofold. What is happening in the book and what it actually is. What it actually is Nikolai Carpathia tapping into the Satan juice to read the Wikipedia article for UN parentheses 1995.
So here's the thing. Not even the Wikipedia. My man is looking in the encyclopedia about what the UN is. I like to straight up feel like that Tim LaHaye and Jerry Jenkins were like, okay, we're going to go to the encyclopedia. We're going to go to our CD-ROMs encyclopedia to look up the UN and get information about
this. Because his speech is kind of about unity, but also about how sick the UN is and how...
We fucking love the UN.
You know, in 1994, the year the International Monetary Fund... 1944, the year the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank were established. You know, he's basically using dates and being like, hey, man, this is a group that was put together to avoid war.
And again, conspiracy theory alert, woo-woo. Conspiracy theorists hate the World Bank and the IMF, the International Monetary Fund. Like, so I feel like there is a very intentional thing in this book where they're like, we must connect the Antichrist to these organizations that we think are evil.
Yeah, but like,
for conspiracy theory reasons.
Are they saying the UN's bad too?
Yes.
Yeah, I guess
so. Oh, they think, no, this is Alex Jones shit. They think the UN is bad, and they think that the UN is gonna take over everything. They think that the UN is gonna go in and, like, make martial law be in effect.
They should.
So it's just, again, it's like these little, like, dog whistle, like, red flags for conspiracy theorists. And, like, that to me just shows, like, how deep this stuff is in Tim LaHaye's conception of the world.
Yeah. And these conspiracy theories were happening back in, you know, 94 as well.
It's been around for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, the speech is vaguely just like, how sick is the UN that it was set up after World War II vaguely?
Yeah, we love
it. Here's all these dates, and it is such an honor to be speaking here.
We hate war.
And
we hate it.
It's really weird that, like, this organization whose main goal is to avoid World War III is somehow bad, by the way. But then he sort of, like, switches into, like, he's still kind of talking about how cool the UN is. So then he just, like, alphabetically lists all the countries.
Every country in the world, I think. I don't even know if he was listing just UN countries.
I think just UNs, because the implication is it's just the people that are there.
I guess. So, yeah. So, we're supposed to be insanely impressed by Nikolai Carpathia just listing all these countries without notes. I guess that's impressive.
It's impressive.
Like, yeah, it's impressive to memorize the thing, but it doesn't really mean anything.
But have you seen, like, these kids do those spelling bees? They spell, like, the weirdest words.
Like, yeah, if I, like, sat down for a few days, I could memorize all the countries too. Like, am I supposed to be impressed by this?
He also is switching back and forth between one of his nine languages, which sounds so annoying to me because, like, you're the, you know, complete cavalcade of interpreters whose job is to interpret.
Like, and he's like, oh, God.
Like, all right, now he's speaking Mandarin, so fuck, what is he saying now?
Oh, no, he's Spanish. Oh, shit.
So it's the way that they don't even try to say that this is not the world's most boring speech.
They act like everyone is losing their minds over this. Over Nikolai Carpathia literally just listing countries.
Alabama. Arkansas.
Like, everyone is, like, standing and clapping and crying. Like, every time a country gets, like, named, that people from that country, like, stand up and are, like, clapping.
And there is part of this that I think the closest to it that makes sense is that they are so close to the disappearance of millions and millions of people on the earth. So everyone is scared and they want unity. And, but again, he's just going like Albania.
Like, he's literally just doing a list. Like, it sounds like the most boring speech of all time.
But eventually, as he gets deeper into the letters, people start clapping for their own country in a sense of like both.
Like, yeah.
Nationalism, but unity with the UN.
We're all in this together. there's a quote. More than 5 minutes into the recitation, Carpathia had not missed a beat. He had never once hesitated, stammered, or mispronounced a syllable.
In the part that
that's how you know he's Satan.
And the part that we're not spelling out as much is how much Buck is literally creaming his jeans.
He's like getting weepy and emotional. Everyone, like, the book is saying that everyone in this room is losing their shit.
Yes.
Over this speech. When I just need to stress again, my dude is literally just naming countries. He's like, just saying them in alphabetical order.
I think there's a world in which this could work. I just don't think they did a good job of making it not seem like the weirdest, most boring. Because it's literally like, who's here from, who drove the farthest?
From Albania!
So I kind of get that vibe of it. But again, he's switching back and forth. And he's not switching to, like, home languages. He is literally pandering. And I hate to negatively speak about Carpathia, but he's literally pandering.
We do love him, but we are dogging on him a little bit right now. Buck has this internal thought that I think is just baffling. Tim, can you please read this?
Something had happened in the disappearances of loved ones all over the globe. Journalism might never be the same. Oh, there'd be skeptics and those who worshipped objectivity. But what happened to brotherly love? What had become of depending on one another? What had happened to the brotherhood of men and nations? Even the cynical Steve Plank and Buck Williams continued to clap and cheer, never once appearing embarrassed at their loss of detached objectivity. Huh?
What do you think? Like, what are they trying to even get a... cross.
And that's what's so weird.
About this. I don't even understand what they're trying to say.
They're just trying to pill you in such the weirdest ways that I have no idea what their point
is. Like, are you saying, like, is the author trying to be like, oh, because it's the Antichrist, they're losing their objectivity? But I also feel like right-wing people, like, shit on the media so much, and they're like, oh, your objectivity and blah, blah, blah.
Right,
like, I don't even know what you're saying.
They don't want cold, hard facts when it comes to religion.
They don't.
It's very, very, very strange because this is seen as well, it will be seen as bad. There's an argument to be made that, like, the Antichrist is harnessing quote-unquote good things.
Yeah.
And corrupting them. But, man, I have no idea. Like, sure, you could kind of divorce your brain from the intent of the author, but I don't think we can here, you know?
I think, to me, this reads as, like, I don't think they know what point they're saying.
Right.
I don't think they have a specific point, and it feels very muddled to me right now.
They're just saying shit
and
hoping that one of these sort of dog whistle words cooks
gonna,
on
like,
you.
Warm its way into your brain.
You know, because it's very much like later they're going to probably praise objectivity, right?
That's what I'm curious if it will come up again. And like, I'm really curious to see how they continue to talk about the media, since they in this chunk of chapters have like gone somewhere of like, oh, the media will help the Antichrist rise to power,
right? Because part of it is like, okay, it's actually kind of fine that we're
stop being journalist right now because we did just go through such a global event.
Right. Like, but, is this, like, showing their humanity or is this showing that the Antichrist is that, like, influential?
I don't know. I mean,
he's, like, causing them to, like, change their ideals or something.
It's confusing and it does get close to interesting in a good way, but again, I don't think they quite nail it.
I don't think they mean it. And, I think it was interesting. It's not because they intended it to be.
Right. And they're so chaotic and unsuccessful at so many of their goals that we're just being like, what? It's the Christians that don't like, you know,
objectivity. And like,
so what are you saying here?
So Carpathia keeps on talking.
Jesus.
For like fucking half an hour. Bored. And he's like saying specific names and dates and the people fucking love
like,
it.
Like Greg here. Greg joined in January, by the way. And it was like,
January 16th, 1984. Woo! And I was like, oh my God, how does he know
it's
that?
It's so boring. It's so boring and embarrassing.
Like, have you ever listened to a speech or lecture where people are like name dropping and saying like specific dates and you were like, damn, this is a really... Like, this speech is getting me going.
And part of it is that, like, he's never stepped foot into the UN. So the fact that my man has read an early internet article about what is the UN.
Right. Like, again, he went on his, like, Encyclopedia Encarta. He put his CD in and, like, read up on the UN. And everyone's like, oh, my God. This is the new coming of Christ.
Yeah. When I could kind of follow, strangely, the naming of countries. But then they say he goes on for an extra half hour, just like, and then the bathrooms were installed.
Yeah, like as if everyone would not just be like actively asleep and snoring at this
Who
point.
Who gives a shit? Say Albania again.
Yeah, and then the chapter ends with Buck thinking, after this, Buck knew Nikolai Carpathia would be embraced by all of America. And then... the world.
Oh no, he's the great liar. Oh shit, he's the fucking Antichrist.
The media loves him. Wow. They love him. And he wants peace. And he wants to work with the UN.
And he wants to
the World Bank and all these things.
Disarm and stuff like this. That's evil. What an evil guy.
That's bad. That's what the Satan wants to do.
But that being said, it could be a situation where they are saying that the Antichrist is using good things for bad ends. But I believe the takeaway for evangelicals is...
Those things are bad.
These things are bad. Nuclear deodorant is bad.
Yeah.
Peace shit is bad.
UN is bad.
The UN is bad.
Like, that is what it boils down to.
Even if they didn't intend that, we are in such a, like, black and white, dumbass.
It's, like, rounded up to that. Totally. It's like, well, it's gonna be used for bad, so therefore it's evil.
Yep.
This chapter is just absolutely breathtaking to me. Just, again, that the way that it's written, Tim LaHaye and Jerry Jenkins are like, everyone is going to agree with us that this is like, oh shit, this dude knows what he's talking about. And not that, like, this sounds like the most boring speech that has ever existed on the planet. Yeah,
totally. I'm very curious how the audiobook version of it handles
this.
Oh
my God, that's a really good point. I want to hear Nikolai Carpathia do his little speech.
South Sudan.
Oh, woo!
Swaziland.
Oh my God, we love it.
Sweden.
So yeah, Nikolai Carpathia is in America now. He's on the scene. Shit is happening.
Yeah, I mean, this is their way of being like, hey, this guy. Huh, the world's gonna accept him. Isn't that interesting?
You think he's maybe the Antichrist? Weird.
Well, finally some consistently good chapters.
Yeah,
or
man. I mean, they pissed me off. I was getting really irritated reading it earlier because I feel it was like triggering me.
Yeah.
from like all this like the bullshit about like salvation and like prayer and everything, it was pissing me off.
Yeah.
But then they topped it off with Nikolai Carpathia, and I do love the Antichrist. So.
Yeah, there was no car bombing like last chunk to really spice it up, but they did have a 2-hour long speech where he just listed the footnotes of the Wikipedia article.
And that's very exciting.
And we like that. And good for Nikolai Carpathia, actually. Yeah.
No, he looks like Robert Redford. Everyone's going to be in love with him.
They did say he has a slight Romanian accent. Slight. Which gives him a little extra flavor, a little extra zhuzh.
Yeah, so, I know, I feel like we keep saying it, but we are truly in the shit is going to be happening now.
Right. Now that they've kind of implied...
They've introduced the Antichrist for real, for real.
For real, for real. And they've sort of outlined the stakes of becoming a Christian.
Yes.
Because one could see, like, okay, I'm reading this. You know, I don't know a lot about it. Why don't you just become a Christian? And then the guy's like, you should become a Christian. But by the way, people are going to turn against you and try to kill you.
They will try to murder you. And you have to mean it when you say it or it doesn't count.
And the Antichrist is going to come up and try to kill you. I don't think they've gotten super deep in how intense the Antichrist will get. But still, it's sort of like, well, if you do this, you will become persecuted.
And again, like, I feel like Left Behind is porn for Christians.
Yep.
It's martyr porn because they get to be like, oh my God, that would be me. I would be like, I will never deny Jesus. Like, I would rather die. Like, that's like their favorite thing to imagine.
Because like, there are
this brand of Christianity.
There are people who believe in the tribulation, but some of them believe that the rapture happens at the end of it.
Right. So everyone's there together.
So yeah, that's a fun one, which, you know, hey, that's what I wanted because I wanted to see those weird scorpion guys.
But what if you got killed? What if
I would go to heaven?
Yeah, that's true. It would be pretty
And it sick. Sounded really fun to like run away from the Antichrist and his little minions.
That does sound fun. And also it would be cool to like stave off going to heaven as long as possible. Cause as we've discussed, heaven sounds very boring. So it would be definitely cooler to live in the apocalypse.
Totally.
Well, I think we have appropriately covered these chapters.
We have.
Tim, any other last thoughts?
No, not in these chapters other than, yay, plot. We can get into like the capital P plot of the books here and like what our characters are going to be having to deal with throughout the rest of the frickin' series as opposed to just dealing with their rapture. But I'm excited to get deeper in, and I'm hoping that more bad, like, Carpathia's gonna start doing bad stuff, or at least, like, oh, wait a second, I didn't vote for him.
Yeah, I need Carpathia to be more naughty, for sure.
Yeah.
I think my big takeaway from these chapters is just, once again, reiterating to people that are not, like, from this space, like, people genuinely, currently, in this day, believe that this is how shit is going to go down.
Yeah.
And that is why they act like they do.
Mm-hmm.
It's
Say it. Real. Tell them.
It's real.
Preach it.
Ugh. Well.
Well, you can follow me on Twitter at Tim Lanning. You can follow Jennifer on Twitter at Jennifer Cheek.
Mm-hmm.
The new season of Game of Thrones, the House of the Dragon, is starting up on August 21st. Cast of Thrones is back, baby. This time, it's just me.
It's a mother friend. I'm not joining you this time. Yes. I got too many other things to do.
Yeah, Jennifer, Nick, and Michael didn't want to do it for obvious reasons because Game of Thrones ended so poorly.
It got so bad. I don't want to deal with it anymore.
Yeah, which is fair because the show is bad and some of the fans were even worse. But me and friend Nika and our friend Felicia are going to be handling the watching. They're recapping and having a great time.
And so you will be in great hands. So yes. If you are a brave soul that is going to keep in the Game of Thrones world, you should listen to Cast of Thrones, even though I'm not on it.
Yep. Cast of Thrones. It's called Cast of Thrones. It's a podcast like this one.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. Anything else up for you?
No, I think that's it for me.
All right. Well, I love you guys. Bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.